Welcome to Picks with the Professor, the show where a real statistics professor gives you sports betting tips, hopefully with better audio today. I don't know what happened yesterday, folks. I've got a very good microphone. I haven't seen a microphone for a long time. Tested out the audio yesterday after the show, and it seemed fine. Tested here before the show, it seemed fine. So if it's a problem, then I don't know what's going on. The only thing I can think of is I was able to finally fix on my computer. Now I have it always going to hardwired internet over Wi-Fi. Maybe the Wi-Fi connection wasn't very strong last night. It got on Wi-Fi. I don't really know. So maybe I've solved the problem. I don't know what happened. That was really weird. So hopefully it's fine today. Going to talk here about Tuesday's baseball slate. Monday hasn't happened yet. Recap of a very good Sunday. Sundays have been really good for us so far. And of course, the only place you can find Sunday picks and information is over on Dub Club, mainly because I got to give my voice a day off here. So we only, you know, we don't do shows for Sunday baseball. But so far, so good on the Sunday slate. You can see it there again. I mentioned this yesterday, but the audio was so terrible. You might have just said screw it, or you might not have caught it. But again, we're now just designated the B grades as the best model edges, and the A grades are the subset of B grades that are the ones I also like the most. And so we went a little bit aggressive on Sunday, but now going forward, we're going to kind of scale back and have fewer A grades, only have, you know, six or so on average a day, maybe seven, maybe five if it's a smaller slate, and kind of say those are the top of the top. Going to give out one of those here on show every day. We'll call it here the free show A grade play, but we'll have the A grade play of the day on Dub Club. That's my favorite play. We'll still do a first five extra credit pick over on Twitter, and then we're having what I'm calling honorable mentions, kind of the next best up that I like as well that I think should be part of our betting repertoire for that day. And those will be the, you know, six, seven-ish A grade plays a day. And so we'll kind of track the B grades, kind of track how the model's doing itself. So far, first five, great, full game, not so great. Made some tweaks, made some adjustments here. You know, again, the totals did really well. One of the best days we've had all season, but a long way to go for those to kind of bounce back. But there's a lot happening with the weather, the potential new baseball. You know, that there's been some rumblings about that, and you know, the early season, trying to kind of map everything out. So the totals, especially for the full game, not doing as well, but the first five halves. So again, kind of a mixed bag with what the model's done. But overall, we've done a decent job of selecting out the top picks. That's kind of what the A grades will symbolize now, the ones that we're selecting out as the top of the top. And hopefully we can continue to drive those ROIs higher for the full games, get those in the positive, and keep them where they are for the first fives, which has been our big moneymaker. Remember, though, Dub Club is the place to be to get all those extra A-grade picks, the play of the day, Discord chat group. That's the place to ask me questions, learn about things, interact with me and a bunch of other really smart people who are also, you know, making money, do betting different sports, things we don't even have shows for, models for, like the NBA, for example, right now. A lot of good conversation, a lot of fun, a lot of good information, a lot of people looking out for each other, suggesting how to handle these, some of these boosts and profits and profit boosts and all these different things going on. All of that's over on Discord. Updates when starting pitcher change, got a couple games that we don't have confirmed starting pitchers for. So if that changes, of course, all that stuff will be over on Dub Club. Summaries, information, all sorts of goodies, and of course, information when you don't have time or can't watch the show, or when the audio just is terrible, which again, hopefully we won't have that again. I don't quite know what happened. But a 10-day free trial to start you out with the link in the show description. I have a link now. I didn't realize it wasn't linking before. So another link in the show description there for the Dub Club information, or the QR code on the screen if you're with us on YouTube can get you to right to that free trial. I'll make it real simple to get you there. But some quick refreshers before we start again, picksoftheprofessor.com/new reminders about the model, the community rules, weather is subject to change. I'll talk about that. There's a couple games here that I like the unders on right now, but the weather is kind of on the border, you know, not in a good Tex-Mex restaurant kind of way. And it's in, I'm a dad, I gotta make the dad jokes, right? You know, if the wind shifts a little bit, the temperature changes a little bit, we're so far out in front now that I'm not pulling the trigger yet, and I'm keeping an eye on it because they're kind of at some key numbers, and it's like, hey, if everyone else realizes the same thing, the market will adjust. So we just kind of be ready to pounce as the time start moving, because we don't want to lose these numbers that we're at, but we're also hoping to get a little more clarity on some of these weather things. So we'll talk about that when it's necessary. But the key idea is the books view everything in probability. We're going to view everything in probability. The most profitable sports bettors in the world view everything in probability. And so that's the driving force behind this, is we're going to talk about where our probabilities differ from the markets, why that may be the case, and where it may be profitable to take advantage of it. But as always, take what you like and leave the rest. Last but not least, if you can like the show, we would like that. a lot. I'm going to start off here in the afternoon with the Rangers and the A's. A little late afternoon baseball here on Monday, a little bit of late afternoon day baseball here on Tuesday is always good, better than last week. 3:37 p.m. Eastern, so a normal start time, of course, out on the West Coast. Rangers and A's, mid-60s for this one. The wind will be blowing, looks like a little bit across to start, and then shifting to out as the game finishes up. It'll be strong enough that that'll matter. If the wind is more out for the totality of this game, the park's still going to play pitcher-friendly, but not by quite as much. If it stays across for longer, it doesn't shift to blowing out, it's going to play pretty pitcher-friendly. So you're looking at a difference in projected runs of somewhere between, you know, if it's a little bit less out, doesn't get as out as much as it looks like it will be towards the end, that projected total might be more 8.4-ish. If it looks like it's going to be out for more of the game, that projected total might get more to 8.7-ish. So we're kind of still in the mid-8 range for the projected total of this, but it really matters if you're more mid to low versus mid to high. That wind, that 10 to 15 miles an hour towards the end of the game could matter a little bit. The ball does tend to fly a little bit better than Oakland during the day, something to keep note of. Rush Stripling will get the ball for Oakland. I've been really high on him. 4.24 ERA, FIP of 3.38. I mean, that's fantastic. XFIP right around 4. He projects still a little bit worse than this because he hasn't been quite this good in a while. But I mean, there's no reason to look at that 109 grade. And I think Cousin Jared mentioned this when he was on last week, that some of these pitchers that have 109, 106 or whatever, it's kind of a mixed bag. Some of them are going the wrong direction. Some of them are going the right direction. Some of them you like what you see, some of them you don't. But it's not like an automatic, you know, we're in trouble with this guy type thing. So I wouldn't be discouraged by that. I like Stripling. I think he's a pretty solid pitcher. I think he's probably closer to league average than the model realizes. He's done great so far for the A's. He's been everything they could ask for and more. So I have no problems backing him. And that set of relievers for the A's continues to look pretty solid. By the day, they're you know, worse than baseball last year. I'm not even sure it was close. And this year, they're pretty competent. Their offense has lagged behind. And, of course, that's the areas where the Rangers will have an edge at offense and still reliever. As good as the A's relievers have done, I still need to see more data from them. Relievers can be pretty volatile before we go ahead and say the A's relievers are absolutely better than the Rangers. The issue is the Rangers, we don't know who's starting yet. And that's why there's no line on this game yet. Projecting Jack later here, but, you know, between – I think I saw like Scherzer had already, he's starting to work on a rehab. So I don't even know when he's coming back. I don't think Grom's anywhere near, but they've just had so many injuries with regards to starting pitchers. You know, Bradford was up, now he's out. I can't even tell you who's coming back for this Rangers team. Fangraphs has it as Leiter. And so we'll say it's him. His first start was rough. Obviously gave up a lot of runs. His FIP was fine. His XFIP was high. It's one start. I think he'll be fine in the long run. The model's just not high on him right now. And it's just like, hey, he still needs some time in AAA. And these are the years where pitchers get a lot better and they'll gain, you know, 10 points in the model's grade just from a solid season in the minor leagues easily, maybe even 15. So, I mean, he's going to be fine. I don't think he's going to be terrible his whole career, but he's a young guy and he's a guy the Rangers really, I don't think they wanted to have to rely on this year. I'm not even sure if they will, if they'll use him or not here. It hasn't been confirmed, but if it is, again, he's, you know, they wanted, you know, to just hold on and piece it together with guys like Bradford coming in who may not also even be great starting pitcher material, but just piece it together, hold it on. But their plan, you know, is Evoldi and Gray are the middle glue of that rotation with DeGrom and Scherzer at the top. And then it just doesn't even matter beyond that because you've got so many good starting pitchers. And needless to say, it hasn't worked out that way for the Rangers. So Leiter's a guy who, you know, again, I'm sure he'll be fine. He could use another year probably in AAA to get things sorted out. His first start didn't go well. If they do call him back up, that's kind of the area where the A's have an edge. Again, no line right now, so can't really assess how the books feel about this. I can just say that I'd have the Rangers here as slight favorites, but not by much. And I'd be perfectly inclined to take the A's or the A's first five, depending on where the price is better. Assuming it is lighter for the Rangers and assuming the price is reasonable. As you can see there on screen, the B grade threshold for the A's, you're looking at plus 127. Again, for the first five information, all of that's over on Dub Club. But some sort of A's play isn't the craziest thing. I like backing Stripling here. Again, we'll see if the starting pitcher is Leiter. If not, we will rerun the model with a new starting pitcher, have new metrics, et cetera, and see what the model thinks of this whenever that time comes. Tigers and the Guardians, 6:10 p.m. Eastern, first pitch, mid-upper 70s to start, around 70 degrees to close. Wind will be blowing out. And it's going to pick up as the night goes along, which is usually not overly common. Typically, wind gets a little bit calmer at night. But it's going to turn what is a very pitcher-friendly ballpark into one that's actually a little bit hitter-friendly. The ball's going to fly in that park about as well as it can. Now, that's not to say that you can't see a 95-degree day in Cleveland. You don't see many of them. And what is the probability that it happens to be a day game and there's baseball then, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not overly likely. You just don't see a lot of them. And so the data for that park mostly consists of night games or some of these games here that are technically night games, but then you get a little bit more warmth to start. But it's cool off the water there. And you don't get a lot of strong winds blowing out. And so a lot of the data for this park is just very pitcher-friendly atmospheres. This is about as hitter-friendly as that park's going to get. It won't play like Fenway. It won't play like Kauffman. But it'll play actually probably more hitter-friendly than pitcher-friendly. So that's something to keep an eye on here in this one. With regards to these offenses, the Guardians offense, I think, is better. They've done really well this season. Again, I'm not convinced they're going to be a top-five offense all season. But they're moving in the right direction. Bullpens, again, so far the Tigers haven't been bad, but I said this yesterday, I still love this Guardians bullpen a whole lot more than the Tigers. Starting pitcher-wise, Maeda, he hasn't done well so far this season. He wasn't really good last year. It's been a while, I think, since he's been good, really, in my opinion. How do you feel about him? I think his last start was better, if I remember correctly. Sometimes I get teams and pitchers confused because there's just so much to keep up with. But I think his last start was better. It depends kind of on which eye you close, right? We talk about FIP and XFIP a lot. You know, if you buy into one more than the other, you can kind of make a more rosy-eyed case than the other. If FIP's up in the sixes, XFIP's in the low fours. If he pitches like that XFIP, you know, he's probably closer to just meh. He's probably closer to slightly subpar. If he pitches closer to that FIP, though, I mean, you're talking about one of the worst starting pitchers that still has a job. Logan Allen, on the other hand, things also haven't gone well with him. But when you look at his underlying metrics, both FIP and XFIP are better than his ERA. The XFIP's even better than his projection was coming into the season. I don't think Logan Allen at this point is, you know, Cy Young material, right? I'm not breaking news by saying that. But at least when I look at Logan Allen, I see mediocrity. And that's, again, not like I'm not saying he's good, but I see a mediocre starting pitcher. Whereas with Maeda, like, I really have to try to find mediocrity. Everything else points to worse. So what I'm trying to say by that is the grades on these two pitchers are relatively similar, but I have more faith in Logan Allen than Maeda. Maeda's a little more volatile, which is crazy to say as a veteran, but I just don't really know what I'm getting from him, and it might be okay and it might be bad. Whereas Logan Allen, I think I know what I'm getting. It ain't going to be good, but it'll probably be okay. So I at least feel like, you know, worst case scenario for this game for the Guardians is the starting pitchers are equal. The offenses are relatively close. The Guardians are at home with a bullpen edge. I think the Guardians should be favored in this game by a decent bit. The model says they win this 60% of the time. The market's only got it at 54%. B grade threshold is minus 134. So in this game, it's Guardians or pass. And we'll talk about the total here. The implied total is just over 8. It's just a little bit tilted to the overside for right now. The model's got it closer to 9 because of how hitter-friendly the weather is supposed to impact it. We're too far away right now to know for sure how the weather's going to impact this. So this is not a total that I would say run and bet this over because it's really reliant on a couple things. Number one, it's reliant on the model. Just not a huge fan of either one of these starting pitchers, but it's also reliant on this weather. So until we get closer, there's really no reason to run and bet this over. Now, if the weather keeps looking like this and there's really no changes to the forecast here as we approach first pitch, and right now we're 26 hours or 25 hours away as at the time of this recording from first pitch. If it stays like this, even if the book's total jumps to 8.5, I don't mind going over 8.5. Obviously, the push protection on 8 is better, but 8's, you know, only going to get you, 7-1, I guess, is possible. Like, nothing's possible. Really, realistic scores is only going to get you 5-3, 6-2. It's not as important as 7 or 9 is, over 8 is better than over 8.5 for sure. But I'd almost rather play over 8.5 and wait and just confirm this weather is good, because these offenses aren't, I mean, I just don't trust the Guardians offense that much. I don't trust the Tigers offense at all. Both these bullpens are solid enough. Again, the model's not overly high on the Tigers bullpen, but it's been fine so far. So I really need this weather to be in our favor before we go over. So it's over or pass. The under just is a non-starter with this pitching matchup and this weather. But we just definitely want to confirm the weather before we make that play. Diamondbacks and the Reds, around 7 degrees for this one. A little bit warmer to start, a little bit cooler to finish. Wind to be blowing in or across. And again, this is another one that's going to matter. We're talking about 10 to 15 miles an hour. If it's blowing in, this park's going to play only slightly hitter friendly. If it's blowing across, it's going to play fairly hitter friendly, not maybe quite as much as the summer, but an average type night in Cincinnati. We've got Zach Gallen for the Diamondbacks, who's been really good so far, a guy who's not quite as good on the road. Most pitchers have that problem. You tend to find, for whatever reason, the NL West pitchers a little bit more extreme than usual on that. You know, Kelly Gallen, Logan Webb, potentially another guy in that boat. So a guy I'm not dying to back on the road as much as I am at home. At home, I love, you know, you love backing this guy. But his overall numbers are still really good, and that's, of course, a mix of home and road starts. FIP in the mid-3s, XFIP in the low-3s. One of the best starting pitchers in baseball. Southern's got him at number 18, the 18th healthiest, you know, best pitcher of those that are healthy. And yeah, he's for sure a top, you know, 30 pitcher, probably a top 20 pitcher, maybe even top 15 pitcher with how good he's been. He's just consistently solid. Again, though, a guy you trust a little bit more at home, whatever that's worth. Offensively, again, I've been preaching it all year. This Reds offense just isn't that good. They need Matt McClain back, but even then, they really just aren't that great of an offense. I think he saw it this weekend in some really hitter-friendly situations just get thumped by the Orioles. When you look back through this team, and I was telling the people on Discord this, I feel really vindicated about being down on the Reds and fading them so far this year, because their series wins this year are against, you know, the White Sox, and I think they got the Phillies like the first week of the season. The Nats, I think. I mean, and that's like all of their series wins. When they've played real teams, they've gotten thumped pretty bad. You know, the Orioles, the Rangers, you know, et cetera, the real teams that have beaten them. And why is that? Because the Reds aren't that good on offense, right? I've been saying all year, their bullpen's not good either. The Diamondbacks bullpen's not good either, but the Diamondbacks will have a big edge with the bats. They'll have an edge on the mound where the Reds are going to be successful. We've been saying it all years about the starting pitching. That's as far as they're going to go. If those starters are great, then they've got a chance to hang around and be competitive. And if they aren't, they won't be. Montas has been a pretty mixed bag so far in his it's 5 starts. I'm going to say 4, really, because the one start that he got injured in, he didn't really do anything in. But, you know, 4.19 ERA, a FIP in the upper 4s, an XFIP in the upper 4s, a FIP in the low 5s. It's a little bit concerning. He wasn't great last year when he pitched. He wasn't great the year before that when he pitched. It's been a while since he's been really good. And even back then, I remember that was when we were first starting to put these shows out there. So this was when I was first starting to talk about these guys professionally rather than just, you know, to buddies and stuff. I remember commenting that Montas was getting a lot of love for a stretch he had where I just wasn't sure it was real. It looked like a little bit of smoke and mirrors. It looked like a little bit of playing a lot of games in a really pitcher-friendly ballpark at night and, you know, on a cool night in the summer when the ball's just not flying there for whatever reason. He just hasn't been that good. I'm not saying he can't be good, but I think there's just a perception that Montas is this really good pitcher, and I'm just not sure he's that good. I mean, he might be okay, and he's got some upside. He's had some really good starts, but you've also seen the downside. A lot of volatility there, I guess is what I'm saying. The issue, of course, there's a lot of volatility with Gallen on the road that you just don't quite trust him like you do at home. And so with all that said, you know, the Diamondbacks are favored. They should be favored. This gets into the B-grade threshold with regards to the model, so the model likes this play on the Diamondbacks. I'm not running to do it. I don't love backing Gallen on the road. It's Diamondbacks or pass. Maybe you look first 5. You know, I don't love the Reds bullpen, but it's not like the Diamondbacks bullpen is really any better, especially until they get, you know, their stuff, you know, all figured out with their injuries and everything. So it's Diamondbacks. It's a play that if you're looking to make 15 plays on a Tuesday, I'm definitely on the Diamondbacks. If you're trying to find the best 5 plays, it's hard to argue that they're better than some of the other things that we're going to be able to find in the first 5 markets. So like the Diamondbacks, don't necessarily love them. And the model says to go over in that park, That's never the craziest idea, but going to want to check the weather because, again, if the wind shifts a little bit in, the ball's not going to be quite so crazy flying out. If the wind's blowing across with that small ballpark, 9 seems like a steal. So kind of a lot just, again, depends on what the weather looks like in the morning. Angels and the Pirates, 6:40 p.m. Eastern. Low 70s to start, upper 60s to finish. Slight breeze blowing in. Going to make this park play pretty normal, pretty average across the board. Slightly hitter friendly overall in Pittsburgh. Weather's going to make it kind of come back to normal. Patrick Sandoval and Quinn Priester. Sandoval, not as bad as that 5.91 ERA. Really good underlying metrics. 3.19 FIP. I have no qualms about him. I think he will be just fine. Very respectable pitcher. As you can see there, that 101 grade, you know, probably, you know, not a top five pitcher in baseball, of course, but very respectable. Quinn Priester has gotten results in his three outings, but the Pirates are in a very interesting spot right now. The rumor, of course, that they'll be calling up Skeens for Friday's start. That would align with Bailey Falter. And of course, the guy after him here in Quinn Priester is the other guy that could lose his spot. So I kind of think that, you know, Falter pitched Sunday, had one rough inning, but otherwise looked okay. Of course, it was against the Rockies. Not that the Angels offense is necessarily that much better, but I kind of think Priester's pitching for his job here. So keep that in mind, because if he gets lit up here, and the underlying metrics again, XFIP in the low fours, but a FIP in the upper sixes. It's not a ton of data, but it does. It is concerning, and every start matters a lot. We don't know how many of them. So if Priester struggles here, you know, I have to imagine he's the guy going to get sent down, and they'll push Falter start back to Saturday, and then in Priester's spot and allow Skeens to pitch on Friday, assuming that is still their plan. So I don't know if that changes how you handicap this game. He probably has heard the same rumors. He probably knows the same thing, that he's, you know, Skeens is knocking on the door and he's pitching for his job here. So I don't know, just keep that in the back of your mind. But the Angels will have an edge starting pitcher. The issue for them, of course, that's the only place they'll have an edge without Trout. I do not trust their offense. You don't trust them even with Trout because it's a one-man show. I know there's been a lot made about how he's done with the runners in scoring position or whatever, but that's a really small sample size. It doesn't really mean anything. The biggest issue is that it's just one guy. And when you know, that the sequencing and the timing doesn't work out when he's in the lineup and they can't get in sync, that's the problem. They don't have anyone else. It's all Trout has to do it, or else no one else can do it, right? And then when Trout's out, who's going to do it, right? So it's like it's just all one guy at this point. And so I don't think their offense is very good. The model would tell you to go over on this one. I don't trust either one of these offenses whatsoever. So take that for what it's worth. Again, the model would say, you know, 8 with some juice go over, but I am just not sure I can get behind that. The B grade threshold for the Pirates, it looks like we just eke into that. I'm always down with fading the Angels because I don't think they're very good. Haven't thought they're very good all season. And so, again, the model thinks the Pirates win 58% of the time, and that B grade threshold at minus 124, we are just inside of that with the current price of minus 123. So looks like it's Pirates or pass for me, over or pass, but I'm definitely passing on that regard. But as always, folks, shop around. Make sure you have multiple books in your portfolio. You go to your book of choice. Pirates are being offered, you know, at, you know, minus 130. And that's not a terrible pick on the Pirates, but if you can save an extra nickel, get them at minus 125. If you can get the Pirates at minus 123, it gets into the B grade. If you can get them at minus 120, every 5 cents, every 10 cents you can save can make a big difference. So just shop around, make sure you have multiple outlets. If you don't have an account with them yet, sign up at BetUS and get a 125% bonus on your first ever 3 deposits. The link is in the show description right there at the top.
BetUS, America's favorite sportsbook and casino. Live betting and racebook. We're celebrating 30 years with a historic offer, a 125% sign-up bonus on your first 3 deposits, plus 10% gambler's insurance. Get started today. BetUS, where the game begins.
Then we'll move forward with the Blue Jays and the Phillies. 6:40 p.m. Eastern, first pitch. Low 70s to start, upper 60s to close. Slight breeze out. Please slightly hitter friendly. Jose Berríos and Christopher Sanchez. Berríos has been really good with that 1.44 ERA. Underlying metrics put him more in the low fours. I think his projected grade of a 92 is pretty accurate when you look at the underlying metrics. He's good, not great. So far, the results have been great. But I've said this about Berríos last time he pitched. I've said it for years now with him. He's been a guy that's just kind of you know, long-term tracked right along with his underlying metrics, but has had these stretches of results that have countered from that in weird ways that are fairly unexplainable. And then it just flips and it goes back the other direction. He had a stretch where he just, you know, the ERA, he just kept giving up runs, and it was like, why is he giving up runs? He shouldn't be this bad. And then one day he stopped giving up runs and gave up way fewer runs. And it was like, wow, I don't even know if he's this good. And he just kind of goes all over the place. So Brios is a guy that you never know what you're going to get from start to start. I mean, you ride the highs, sure, if you have to. And of course, right now he's pitching really well. But I would caution you both directions on him. Check those underlying metrics. He's good. If he keeps pitching like this, that ERA is going to get up into the twos, threes, and pretty soon, you know, probably hover around four, which isn't bad for a starting pitcher. It's just, you know, maybe not quite as good as that ERA looks. The model has him as the better pitcher in this starting matchup. The reason why is because of the depth that Brios can lend. He's a guy who, you know, you feel fairly confident can get you six, maybe seven innings. He's pretty consistent there. Whereas Christopher Sanchez is a guy that the Phillies haven't really stretched out quite as much. But on a per-inning basis, I actually think Sanchez is the better pitcher. His ERA is at 3.68, but his xFIP's lower than that in the low threes. His FIP's in the upper twos. He's been a guy I've been high on, you know, for at least a year now. And the Phillies' bullpen is really good, so they don't have to really have him stretched out that much. Monday's game is still happening right now. They've got Wheeler on the mound, who looks like he's you know, rolling like always. And so you have to assume the bullpen will be in good shape. And so I think the edge that the Blue Jays would have with a guy like Brios is kind of nullified, because I think on a per-inning basis, I think Sanchez might actually be the better pitcher. And then with their bullpen, that makes Sanchez, again, a better pitcher. He doesn't have to go as deep. He could focus on just, you know, getting out of five innings or whatever. And that helps him. The counters, the Blue Jays, as much as their offense has been clueless this season, sans, you know, a little bit of a break against the Nats. I don't know what that means. They are still very right-handed heavy. Facing a lefty is exactly what they want. So that's the thing to keep in mind. Blue Jays versus a lefty, as much as their offense can be a concern, it's the same thing I'll say that I said last week about the Rays. The Rays got really right-handed heavy, especially until they get like four guys injured and they're all left-handed. So the Rays are like super right-handed heavy right now. And sure enough, they face Quintana as a lefty and put up a ton of runs. It's the same thing here with the Blue Jays. I know their offense has struggled. Facing a lefty is what they want. Now they're facing a pretty decent lefty. So I don't know. It's one of those things where, again, sometimes, you know, passing is the smart decision. You can just kind of say, hey, there's some kind of, you know, contradictory things happening. It's hard to figure it out. We've got the Blue Jays winning this 48% of the time. We're higher than them in the market, mainly because of the fact that they're so good against lefties. If it wasn't for that, I think I would be pretty much in lockstep with the market. The price isn't good enough for us to jump on the Blue Jays just yet. Plus 117 is what the current price is, and plus 121 is what we need to get to for a B grade. So not there yet with the Blue Jays, but I think the market's treating this Blue Jays offense against a lefty as if it's going to be really terrible. But I mean, they really are so right-handed heavy. A left-handed pitching, you know, is going to help solve a lot of their problems. Again, though, with that Phillies bullpen, I do like Christopher Sanchez. I'm not running to back the Blue Jays unless the price gets better. But at this point, it looks like it's Blue Jays or pass. As much as I like Sanchez, there's a bunch of things I like in this game. And that's, again, where sometimes we just have to pass. The market does seem to be a lot lower on the total than we are. We've got it closer to 9. They've got it closer to 8. Again, part of that reason probably is the fact that I still have some faith in the Blue Jays offense that they'll be okay, slash if they're going to be okay, they're going to be okay against a lefty. So it's also looking like an over or pass type situation. Orioles and Nats, 6:45 p.m. Eastern. Low 70s for this one. Slight breeze blowing out. I'm going to play fairly hitter friendly at that part. Corbin Burnes and Trevor Williams. Corbin Burnes is really good. You don't need me to tell you that. His FIP's a little bit high this year so far, but he's just fine. Number six, the sixth best starting pitcher of all the healthy ones right now, according to Sideline. Trevor Williams is the really intriguing case, and the guy I talked about previously, the results have been there. He's been a revelation so far this year, much better than he's ever looked in his entire career. 2.27 ERA, FIP in the upper twos is good too. The only concern you have to have with him is that xFIP at 4.31 kind of starts to align a little bit more with what we think he should be and where he projects to be. So I'm not really sure he's going to be able to keep this up. What the FIP being that much lower than the xFIP FIP tells me is that he's been really lucky with regards to the number of home runs he's allowed. He's just kind of kept balls in the park. It's not really a discernible skill. The difference between a home run is mostly up to the hitter and not the pitcher. And it's just a subtle difference on launch angle where the bat hits. And it's not something that pitchers overly control. What pitchers tend to control is how hard they get hit. They don't necessarily get control whether that hard hit is hit just slightly high enough where it hangs up for a warning track fly ball. And so kind of expecting a little bit of negative regression for Williams, and regression, of course, can be negative or positive. So I don't think he's going to be able to keep it up. Burns is the better pitcher here, and I think it's by more than the ERAs would indicate. The other thing, of course, to note, as he continues to pitch in this park, a hitter-friendly ballpark, you expect more home runs, and he's been kind of getting lucky, leaving guys on base, gets guys on base, some home runs happen, all of a sudden runs might come in bunches. The Orioles can score runs in bunches. So that's kind of the fear here. Williams has been really good so far, but I'm just not sure it's worth backing him here in this game. The market and the model are really aligned, though. The market's got the Orioles winning 64% of the time. We've got it 63% of the time. And as you can see, though, the price that the Nationals are at right now in the market, not good enough to jump on. In general, I would have said last year, I'm so used to saying if we're playing the Orioles, we want to play them full game. And if we're fading them, we want to fade first five. Of course, that's because Felix Bautista was one of the most dominant closers we've seen in quite some time. At this point, though, these relievers are pretty even, so I don't even know if that holds. Do expect more runs than the market is expecting. Again, that's partially because Nationals Park is hitter friendly, and that's partially because we don't expect Trevor Williams to pitch as well as he's pitched in the past. Here's what I think is really interesting is that Corbin Burns is really good, and we know that. And so if you are saying that Trevor Williams is going to pitch as well as he's pitched before, which I'm not sure he will, but if you say that, if you say like, yeah, he's done really well, he's turned the corner, he's a good pitcher, and he can hold this Orioles offense in check, then the Orioles shouldn't be favored by as much as they are. That's what's confusing to me, because the total market is priced as if Trevor Williams is going to be a good pitcher and really keep this Orioles offense in check. But the game, as you can see, of us being pretty in line with regards to 64%, 63%, that's pretty dang close. The game, the market seems to be treating the pitchers like I am, like the model is, which is, Corbin Burns is the much better pitcher. So something's off in this game. I don't know if it'll rectify itself. Sometimes these things happen and there's this sort of like, well, if you think this, this should happen, but if you think this, this should happen, and they don't jive together. And sometimes that kind of comes out overnight and you get to the next day and it's fixed. And we'll wake up and the total to this game tomorrow might be 8.5, pretty juiced to the over, might be 9. And we'll say, oh, okay, it got sorted out. Or maybe with this total being this low, a bunch of Nats money is going to come in and the market will have the Nats winning this game, 40% of the time. But it's like there's something off. There's an edge to be had somewhere. I'm not really sure where it is. I would tend to say it's with the over right now. But I just think it's interesting that we're seeing the Orioles favored by more than the model thinks. And that's not combined with, okay, that means Trevor Williams is going to give up some runs to this really good Orioles offense, because then if it is, then the total should be higher. So something's off in this game. So maybe you can figure out a way to play it there. Maybe you just take the over. Maybe, just something to keep an eye on. It's one of the more unique games I've seen this year with regards to it not quite making sense how the market's treating the combination of side and total. White Sox and the Rays, Mike Soroka and Zach Eflin. I mean, I don't really think you need to be watching this show to know that the Rays are going to be big favorites here. But of course, the fact that they, just struggled with the White Sox makes for an interesting storyline. Zach Eflin's still the much better pitcher here. And folks, it's not even really close. His ERA at 4.17 is a little bit inflated, but his FIPs at 3.76, his xFIPs at 3.40. He projects at 3.88, so he actually projects a little bit worse than the underlying metrics are. So I feel pretty confident that at 84 grade, I think he's good, not great. He's been a guy who's been underrated at times, but at this point, I think we're all kind of on the same page with him. He definitely gives up some runs at times. He can be frustrating at times, but overall, he's a very solid pitcher. Mike Soroka isn't. 6.48 ERA in his 33 innings. His FIPS actually a little bit higher. His ex-FIPS TUS slightly a bit lower, but I mean, right now, the model has, what, 13 pitchers lower than Soroka? If you said he was the worst, I'd be like, sure. I mean, he's not good. This isn't even close with regards to this to the starting pitchers. Here's the thing that's wild to me. Number one, the White Sox bullpen now not in the basement. They're only the second worst set of relievers. But look at the Rays. Number 27 in relief pitchers. That is crazy to me. They started getting worse last year. We talked about it last year. The offense carried them. The relievers were more mediocre. This year, the offense is looking mediocre. And the relievers are looking terrible. It's like everything's going the wrong direction for them. And this is the first time we've seen this, it seems like, in quite some time with this Rays team. That said, they're still the better team. They're still the better offense. And as much as there's only two teams in between these sets of relievers, the White Sox are still really far below there. The Rays win this according to the model 70% of the time. That creates maybe a slight edge because the market only has 68%. But of course, with the juice, when you look at that, even though we've got a 2% higher win probability in the race than the market does, the prices are actually pretty similar. So it's Rays or pass. If you want to put the Rays in a Moneyline parlay, I guess you can. After what we saw, whatever it was last weekend, week and a half, I don't know. What is time? I mean, I don't know. I guess it's a little bit scary. If you can get around minus 200 on the Rays, that gets a lot more, you know, enticing. But minus 233 on the Rays is it's that or pass. But that's just really steep. You know, it's just how much faith are we putting in this Rays offense to still be at least mediocre? How much faith are we putting in Zach Eflin? I don't know. I'm not sure I can stomach it, but I can't back the White Sox, at least full game. We've backed the White Sox a lot first five. We'll see if that continues to be a smart play when the first five market comes out. And again, we'll have all that information on Dub Club. Astros and the Yankees, low 60s in New York for this one. Slight breeze blowing in. It's going to play pretty pitcher-friendly. Again, I mentioned a lot that Yankee Stadium can be, is on average, a more pitcher-friendly than hitter-friendly ballpark. And we're still in that time of the year where a chilly night, slight breeze blowing in is going to make it even more pitcher-friendly than average. Again, the park will play fairly hitter-friendly in the summer on a hot day where the wind's blowing out. But on a night like this, it's going to help the pitchers out and keep the expected number of runs down. Of course, the model still believes in both of these offenses. They've both had some ups and downs. Both starting pitchers seem respectable enough. Verlander's been fine in his three outings. His underlying metrics are a little bit higher, and that's why he's graded out at a 93. It's because of those underlying metrics. If he just had the ERA and the underlying metrics aligned with that, he'd be in the mid-80s, still thinking he's a very good pitcher. But at this point, those underlying metrics are a little bit of a concern. And for me as an Astros fan, I'm looking at Verlander kind of saying he's somewhere between good and just okay, and it's hard to figure out exactly where he falls there. But I'm not necessarily thinking that Verlander is going to be the cure for this Astros team. I think the cure is going to be if they can get all the other starting pitchers healthy and Verlander can just be an accent. But if they're looking for him to be the ace, again, the results have been there, but the underlying metrics are a tad bit of a concern. Luis Gil, kind of a similar story. A few more starts, really good ERA, xFIP a little bit higher. It's kind of, you know, the gap between these starting pitchers is just very questionable because if you look at the underlying metrics this year, you'd actually make a case that Gil is a little bit better. How much does that matter? Because Verlander's only had three starts. Obviously, historically, Verlander's been a better pitcher even last year, but as Verlander's getting older, we have to be a little bit concerned. There's just a lot of question marks on these starting pitchers. I give the edge to the Astros, but it's not by much. I'll say the same thing I've been saying with the Astros. Their bullpen should be fine. It's not right now. When will that fix? Could be tomorrow. Could be today. And everything could be totally fine for the rest of the season for the Astros bullpen. But right now, it's been, you know, big problem number two, with big problem number one being, you know, all the starting pitchers are hurt. And then the bullpen's just been a disaster. Should we overreact to that? I don't know. I don't think the market knows either. The market treats this team like I've been mentioning. It's different every day, it seems like. What I will say is, you know, when the price is right on the Astros, you might have to ask yourself if the first five makes more sense because you just don't want to deal with the bullpen. At some point, maybe you say the price is good enough on the full game, we just got to take it and hope the bullpen holds on, hope the bullpen figures it out. There's no reason they shouldn't. The underlying metrics are fine. But the results just haven't been there yet. Will that turn around? For some teams and situations, it does. For some, it doesn't. I don't really know. But I'm going to say maybe a slight edge to the Astros pitching here, but it's not by much. And it's that not by much that kind of gets you right back to the Yankees winning this 53% of the time is basically home field advantage. So the model is kind of looking at these, you know, this quote unquote edge that the Astros would have at starting pitcher and relief pitcher and saying, I'm not really sure how much it's there, how much that matters. This is still kind of a coin toss game on a neutral field. Yankees are home. They should be favored. So we're in pretty much lockstep with the market on this one. Hard to see an edge with regards to the side. Model would go over 7.5. It's going to be a pitcher-friendly night for sure. Does that mean the total should be 7.5, 8, or 8, 8.5? That's where the market model disagrees. This far out, I'm not really sure I'm dying to play it. And with all the questions about these pitchers, I don't really know. I mean, I'm not feeling great about playing an under in an Astros game at this point. So it's probably over or pass. How much you like that? I don't know. It's over 7.5 is never a fun number to go over. You know, they go over 7. So I don't know. Like I said, over or pass, I guess it's kind of where I think I'll leave it. Red Sox and the Braves. This is one where I would love the under if I knew what the weather was going to be. About 80 degrees to start, fairly warm, starting to get warmer in Atlanta, upper 70s to close. About a 10 mile an hour wind. Is it across or is it in? If the wind's blowing in, it's going to kind of play like a normal park. And I would say, I don't trust this Red Sox offense. I trust both relievers. I trust both starters. The only thing happening is the Braves offense, and I'm not sure they're going to get 9 themselves. And they could, especially if they're pissed off after the Dodgers series, right? If that wind isn't blowing in, though, and it's just blowing across, it's going to be warm enough. The person plays slightly hitter-friendly, and all of a sudden, that total of 9 makes a lot more sense. So holding off on the total on this one to figure out on the weather, is the wind in or not? Because that's going to be really the difference. But otherwise, it sets up to be a good under. I like both pitchers, starting pitchers. I like both bullpens. Like I said, I don't really trust this Red Sox offense at this point. I've sung Ronaldo Lopez's praise. His underlying metrics are very solid. And Cutter Crawford, honestly, same boat. I mean, these two guys have combined for 70 innings of ERA in the 1.5 range. Both of them have FIPs in the 2s and XFIPs in the 3s. I mean, both these pitchers have looked fantastic. I mean, there's just nothing I can add to this. These guys both have looked great. Their grades are going in the right direction. Their ratings are moving in the right direction. The underlying metrics say they're probably not 1.5 ERA pitchers, but I'm not breaking news with that. But these guys should still be good. They're going to have some nights where they give up some runs, but they're going to be just fine. These are really good pitchers, really good bullpens. Like I said, that's a great night for the under. Except that park, if it plays a little bit hitter friendly, again, 9 makes more sense. Otherwise, though, if the wind is going to blow in, keep the runs down just enough, I'm loving an under 9 here. So checking back on this one on the weather. Otherwise, with regards to the side, we're in pretty much lockstep with the market. The model says the Braves win 62% of the time. The market's going to 61. So not really much of any exploitable edge with regards to the side. Padres and the Cubs, about 60 degrees for this one. Slight breeze on about 5 miles an hour right now. Kind of blowing across. No line available. No total in this one because we're too far out, but no line available because we don't know who's going to go for the Padres. This would have been Joe Musgrove. We're projecting instead Randy Vasquez, who has been not very good in his 2 starts, not very good from his minor league data, not a great pitcher overall with regards to the caliber of starting pitcher that typically exists in Major League Baseball. So again, we're going to want to check back on the weather because any weather change in Chicago can make a big difference at that park. And we're going to want to check back in on if the Padres actually throw Vasquez. If they do, they have an edge with the bats. I don't trust either one of these bullpens. But, of course, the Cubs are going to have a big edge at starting pitcher because – and this is where, you know, it's Cubs first 5 or pass unless the price is just insane because Imaniga has been outstanding. 0.78 ERA, he's not going to hold that up. But, I mean, a FIP in the low 2s, an XFIP in the low 3s, his grade gets better and better by the start. I mean, I'm not breaking any news here. He's been fantastic, and you know that. And there's nothing that says it's smoke and mirrors, right? I'm here to tell you when a guy has gotten the results, but, hey, don't believe it. Regression's coming, or a guy's been bad, the results haven't been there, but I'm like, hey, hold the faith, he'll be okay. Nothing to tell you about Imaniga. I mean, he has been great. You know he's been great. He should be great. It's Cubs first 5 or pass. They don't have an offensive edge, but They're going to have a huge starting pitcher if it is Vasquez. Full game, I mean, really depends on the price, but like I said, I don't trust either one of these bullpens. So a lot of TBDs, a lot of question marks in this game. Again, come back with us in the morning on Dub Club, and we'll have something more tied down later on. Mariners and the Twins, upper 50s for this one. Going to be bowling across. Going to play fairly pitcher-friendly. Emerson Hancock and Bailey Ober. I'm not a huge fan of Hancock. Bottom 15 pitcher, according to Sideline, 4.75 ERA, and advanced metrics align pretty well with that. He's not a very good pitcher. Bailey Ober, on the other hand, while the ERA isn't there, the underlying metrics are still solid. I think he'll still be okay. I think the Twins have a big edge at starting pitcher. They have a big edge. I've got the Twins favored here, as they should be, but we're higher on the Twins than the market, so it's kind of a Twins or pass type situation. The current price of minus 140, not quite into the B-grade range of minus 139. But hey, between us friends here, if you want to fudge it and say that's good enough to play minus 140, I don't think that's a crazy situation here. I like fading Hancock. I like backing this Twins bullpen. Both offenses can absolutely disappear. Both offenses can look really good at times. But when I'm sitting here saying the offensive side of the ball, I don't really know what's going to happen, but I really like the Twins' edge. Every inning they're pitching and they're at home, minus 140 is a pretty reasonable price to invest at. Model's got this more at 8.5. The market's got it more at 8. So we're about a half run off there. Not sure it's worth messing with, at least until we have a weather update to see if that 8.5 projection actually holds. Brewers and the Royals, 7:40 p.m. first pitch, Eastern time, of course, not local. Mid-upper 60s to start, about 60 degrees to close, slight breeze blowing out. Still going to be slightly hitter-friendly in that park, fairly hitter-friendly, maybe not quite as much as average, but still a hitter-friendly ballpark. Colin Rea and Seth Lugo. Lugo has been really good with regards to the results so far. I'm not sure he's going to be able to continue that. XFIP 422 aligns a lot closer to his projection. I'm projecting him at a 416. That gets him a 92 grade. Good, not great. So I would say if you're thinking Lugo is great, I know he's had some good runs before with the Mets. That was partially playing in a pitcher-friendly ballpark. We're expecting him to give up a few more home runs here going forward than he's given up. Maybe not leave quite so many guys on base. The benefit for him that's going to make him look better, whenever inning he gets pulled when he has guys on base, the Mets bullpen coming in behind him, the Royals bullpen coming in behind him is good. Again, surprisingly good, given how bad they were last year. And so that is going to help him lead guys on base, which is going to help his ERA out. So that's kind of the saving grace here for Lugo. And not that he necessarily needs overlap again. He's still good for sure. I'm not sure he's quite as good as that 160 ERA. Colin Rea, on the other hand, 267 ERA, but a FIP in the upper fours, an XFIP in the upper fours, and that's why he has a projection in the upper fours. I do not think this is real. I think it's smoke and mirrors. I have no faith in Colin Rea whatsoever. Otherwise, bullpens are solid. Offenses, again, so far these offenses have had spurts where they put up some runs, and they've had times where they haven't. Overall, I still think the bullpens are better than the offenses. The model says the Royals win this 57% of the time and that the price should be minus 134. We can get minus 124. Unfortunately, that's still about a nickel away from the B-grade threshold. It's Royals or pass. And if there is any bit of extra oomph that we're missing and the difference between the starting pitchers is larger than the model realizes, then that makes the Royals probably good enough to play even at a price like minus 124. So again, it's Royals or pass for me. I like backing Lugo if I can. The results have been there. And I like fading Rea because, again, I have no faith it can continue. I think Lugo is going to experience some negative regression, I guess is what I'm trying to say, because I'm not sure he can hold up that 160 ERA. But I think at the end of the day, Lugo's still a good pitcher. Colin Rea, on the other hand, I don't think he's a good pitcher. And so I like to fade that situation when possible. So minus 124 on the Royals would be the play. Again, not quite to that B-grade threshold. So scaling back, not back, putting too much on it. Because I'm not, the price isn't that good, and this Royals offense can definitely disappear at times. But again, Royals are pass for me. into that one. Total wise, models closer to 9, markets more in the 8.5 with a bunch of juice. So not a huge difference. Might be looking over at the issue again. I don't really know if I fully trust either one of these offenses. So a lot's going to be made about the weather on this one, if we think we can get to 9 or not. Mets and the Cardinals, 7:45 p.m. Eastern, first pitch, mid-70s to start, upper 60s to close, slight breeze blowing out. Should play pretty normal on this one here. Jose Buto against Miles Michaelis. Buto, 2.57 ERA. Underlying metrics a little bit higher. Model has him graded out now at a 97, slightly better than league average. Again, I think a good pitcher for the Mets, also benefited by the fact that he's going to be pitching in a very pitcher-friendly ballpark for half of his starts. Michaelis, on the other hand, I have zero faith in. 5.68 ERA, and now his underlying metrics are not that bad, but they still aren't great. I think the Mets have an edge here at starting pitcher. Offensively, the model says they're even, but again, at this point, I trust the Mets offense more than the Cardinals, especially given the Cardinals, whatever you want to call it, that happened this last weekend. The Cardinals' bullpen is good, but the Mets' bullpen is good too. So I'm not really sure this Cardinals' bullpen edge is going to help them that much. Folks, we have our favorite situation here, the wrong team favored game. And thus, folks, this is your A-grade free show pick for Tuesday night. Mets at +113, A-grade value. We are into the B-grade threshold for the model, and I'm giving it that stamp, that professor's stamp of approval to get to an A-grade, as the market is massively underestimating the difference between these two starting pitchers and the model's opinion. We've got them winning 52% of the time. This game is being priced as if these two starting pitchers are similar, but give me Jose Buto every day of the week over Miles Michaelis. So Mets +113, A grade, free show play of the day, worth an investment in my opinion. Giants and the Rockies. Folks, this is the other weather game that I had kind of alluded to. If the weather holds up here, you got to be looking at the under. We're talking about 50 degrees to start, mid-40s to close, and a wind blowing in at 10 to 20 miles an hour, but it's in slash across. So how much is that going to help the pitchers is a big question mark. That's what we're going to want to check back in the morning on Dub Club with the full weather updates, or wherever else you get weather updates from, viewer. If the weather still looks like this, this is going to play like a slightly hitter-friendly ballpark, but it's not going to play like Coors in the summertime. It's going to play like a lot of games we've seen in April. We've backed a lot of unders in Coors, and they've pretty much all won, and the ones that haven't have been kind of a fluky, late-happening thing away from it. So we're winning money on average. And I don't remember playing an under in Coors this season where you just looked at it and you were like, man, that was just terrible. It just didn't hit at all. Like, it either won or it was like, man, that really could have won. So the unders in Coors have been good so far for a couple of reasons. First off, when we've been doing them, it's been these weather situations like we might have here. Number two, this Rockies offense is terrible. I love fading this Rockies offense at this point. Worse than baseball, and it's not even close according to sideline. But again, with this weather, if that wind's blowing more across, your total projection is probably going to be closer to 10. If the wind is blowing more in, the total projection is going to be a lot closer to 9. It's going to be a strong wind, so it could really matter here. We're talking about 20-mile-an-hour gusts, but a chilly night in Coors. Don't ever expect the Rockies to put up a ton of runs. And, of course, Kyle Harrison, a very respectable, very solid pitcher. ERA, FIP, and XFIP all in the upper threes. Dakota Hudson's better than that ERA. He's not good, but I'm not sure this Giants offense is any good either at this point. So we're projecting here 9.42 runs. But again, that's going to go up or down potentially if the weather looks like it's changing. This total, I had seen an 11 out there. So under 11 could make a lot of sense. Even 10.5, I think, makes a lot of sense for the under. Again, though, just got to keep track of the weather. The other option you can look at is a first five under. We've played a few of those as well. Just depends on what the number comes out. And again, the first five projected total and all those, all the information you need to attack the first five is available on Dub Club. With regards to the side, we've got the Rockies winning this 45% of the time. The market only has it at 41%. So it's Rockies or pass. We aren't quite to that B grade threshold yet, but I'm not about to back the Giants on the road unless the price is good. And backing the Giants with this offense that can completely disappear, with a set of relievers that's just meh, and a very average starting pitcher in Kyle Harrison at a price like -152 seems a little bit absurd to me personally. Wrapping us up, one late game, Marlins and the Dodgers. And folks, I'm going to give you just a replay of what I said for Monday's game. And you may not have heard Monday's game, unfortunately, because the whatever happened with the audio, but we talked about it over on Discord. And again, if you didn't hear it, you're about to hear it again. Different pitchers, of course. And the biggest difference between Monday and Tuesday is that Monday is Walker Buehler. And by the time you're listening to this, it may have already happened. It might not have. But, you know, Buehler pitching for the first time in the majors in quite some time. The Dodgers bullpen a little bit weaker now without Evan Phillips. Massive concerns there. Less concerns about that for the Dodgers here on Tuesday with Yamamoto pitching. He's been fantastic, 2.91 ERA. And the advanced metric is actually lower than that. So he doesn't project to come down, but if he pitches like he's pitched this season, his ERA is going to actually come down. Really good. Really good pitcher. And you don't have that same coming back off the injury. What are we going to get from Walker Buehler concern? On the flip side, though, Edward Cabrera, you know, he's given up some runs, you know, 6.05 ERA, but his underlying metrics this year, both FIP and XFIP are under 3. He looks like he might be kind of figuring it out. That last game against the Rockies, we were able to fade him and got the win with the Rockies in the first 5. Largely in part because of the fact that he just piped a fastball to Jacob Stallings, and Jacob Stallings, who's not even a good hitter, hit one out. You know, that's the sort of thing that can happen. And anybody in that Dodgers lineup seemingly can do that. So when you look at this, you know, the Dodgers should win this game. But again, we have to view the world in probability. That's how the sports books do it. That's how all the best sports bettors do it. Do the Dodgers win this game at a high enough clip to justify the price? And my answer to that, at a price like -310, is it's hard to see that. Simply because Cabrera is a guy who can get hot and shut the other team down. And I don't think this Marlins offense is any good at all. The Dodgers offense is, but like, I guess what I'm trying to say is if they were to play this same game 10 times, do you really think the Dodgers would win all 10 of them? If you do, then sure, lay it at -310. You know, drop it in every parlay in the world. But that seems a little bit high to me. The model says they would win 7 of the 10. Winning 7 of the 10 is actually a little more than 7 of the 10, but you can't win a 10th of a game, right? You know, win 7 of the 10 is pretty good. But it's being priced like they're going to win, you know, 3 out of 4. So just like I said about Monday, it's Marlins or pass. Maybe you look first 5. I'm not sure it's for me. You know, when I say Marlins or pass, like we can choose pass. And I don't think it's crazy to choose pass because fading this Dodgers team, especially when they start rolling, can be a fool's errand. I'm just here to say we've seen enough times where the Dodgers have played a 3-game series against a team like the Pirates last year. Well, this year they're not doing that great either, I guess. The Nats. And the Marlins, I think, would line up in the same category where you're like, that team is terrible. The Dodgers should win all 3 games. And we've seen the Dodgers not just not win all 3, they've only won 1 of them, even at home. And I think that's my point, is that I don't know if they're playing 3 or 4. Ignore that for my illustration purposes here. Let's just pretend they're playing 3. If they're playing 3 games, the price that the Dodgers are at right now, they'd have to win all 3. And they might win all 3, but we've seen many a time where they haven't even won 2. And if they win 2 out of 3, you lost money back in the Dodgers 3 times. And you say, oh, we'll play the run line. Well, but what if they win one of those games by 1 run? Like, that's why we have a model for that too. You can get all those probabilities on Dub Club. They're all here sitting in the sheet that I'm looking at. I just can't put them all on screen, right? But the probability the Dodgers win on the run line, what we need that to be a good price at is probably going to be the same situation. You're very unlikely to have a situation. Like, I think one of the common – I don't want to like ramble on too much here, but I think this is important information. Hopefully we're all trying to learn here, right? But one of the common mistakes I see the bettors make – and if you've done this, that's okay. I'm not trying to shame anybody. Just like these are things I want us to look at with our behaviors, is that we'll look at a game like this and we'll make one of 2 mistakes. And the first mistake we'll make is, oh man, the Dodgers are priced too high. Let me put them in a parlay. it doesn't make them any better because the risk reward value still isn't there. And you're still potentially harming your portfolio by more than the payout would be worth relative to our risk tolerance and the probability that they win. It doesn't change anything. It's still priced too high. You're just pricing it too high with something else. It doesn't change anything. The same thing happens when we go to alternate markets. And I'm not saying the run line is like necessarily an alt market, but it's a different market. So if it's very rare that the edges won't be within about 1% of each other, like that you'll get a bigger difference in that. There's no edge backing the Dodgers on the money line. And so people say, I'll just bet them on the run line. The run line price is also too high, almost assuredly. Now, the run line market isn't going to come out yet because it's too early in the day as the time of this recording. So I can't confirm that, but I know how these things work, right? It's going to be too high. So that doesn't mean they won't cover the run line either. It just means the price is too high. And if you're betting the run line, you know, let's say for the sake of argument, they play it four times. If you're backing the Dodgers on the run line at minus odds, they've got to win three of the four to make money. Because if they only win two of the four at minus odds, you've lost money. So what if they win three of the four games, but then the one of the three wins, they win by one? Like, you've lost money. There's just so many ways you can lose money. And that's why we're pricing. So that's why we look at probabilities. It's why we have this model to help us out. And again, if you're using other models, that's fine. We can calibrate. We can look at other things. I'm not saying my model is the only one that's useful. It's just something that kind of help give us some idea. And this model is saying this price is a little bit too high on the Dodgers. I don't mind playing a big favorite. I don't mind playing the run lines. I don't mind playing the minus ones. But this price of the Dodgers is just insane. This Marlins team isn't good. So maybe that means pass. Maybe it means pick your spots in the Marlins. Maybe it means look into, you know, a first five market. Well, like I said, maybe it just means pass. That's all we've got here for today. Thanks for watching. Again, more available on Dub Club. That link in the show description will get you started off with a 10-day free trial. Otherwise, though, as always, remember, you can eat your betting money, but please don't bet your eating money.